This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Well, Mvurwe in Zimbabwe is next where we go. Dumi Muleya is who we're going to be talking to. Of course, multimedia journalist in that country. We're going to be talking about Joe Biden, U.S. President Joe Biden, scrapping the U.S.'s 21-year-old sanctions. Remember, 2003, scrapping the U.S.'s 21-year-old sanctions regimen against Zimbabwe and replacing it with a new set of sanctions against, well, targeting Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa and members of his inner circle. There are, in that particular instance, 11 Zimbabwean nationals, three entities also within that particular set of what, of course, is being now spoken of refocusing and elevating the U.S.'s efforts. A new set of tools, they say, not targeting the people of Zimbabwe, or it's not targeting Zimbabwe or the people of Zimbabwe, but then targeting those who they say are continuing to, of course, carry on with the gross human violations. And of course, what they also suggest is theft from the economy, also human rights violations, I said, and then also the destruction of the political space. Let's go to Dumi Muleya in Mvurwe, Zimbabwe. Dumi, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. Dumi, how are you?
I'm fine. Good evening to you and your listeners.
Sure, man. To me, it sounds like you're in studio. The line is so brilliant. It really, really sounds. To me, are you good?
No, I'm very fine. I'm very fine. How are you? How is Johannesburg?
I'm really, really good. And Johannesburg is fine. How is Zimbabwe in totality? Not maybe just Mvurwe, but how is the sentiment in Zimbabwe? You know, what is the sentiment just on a national level? You know, just, you know, are people in a celebratory mood because maybe, you know, things are beginning to happen? Of people on an upward trajectory, maybe people think things are getting better. Where's the mood of the people of Zimbabwe?
Well, to start with, I'm in Harare. That's the Zimbabwean capital. Well, to answer your question, I think it's a very straightforward one. Yeah. It's an easy question.
Yeah,
everybody knows that the situation in Zimbabwe has been deteriorating. That is after the elections.
Yeah,
and here is the evidence. We don't need to be arguing about it. Of course, the government side, they say things are improving. They say they are building roads here and there. Mm. They have their own set of indicators that they use to claim that the situation is improving. But, that's a very selective picture.
Yeah.
They will tell you about one road which they've been building, that is from Beitbridge, that is border with South Africa and Zimbabwe, to Harare. And then they are further moving up north from Harare to Chirundu. They've just started doing that now. And there have been a few roads that have been fixed here and there. But all those things in their totality, whether they are talking about the roads, whether they are talking about dams that they've built here and there, whether they are talking about supporting farmers on the ground, which is the things that they usually say are indicators of progress, whether they're talking about Chinese investors coming here, there's some steel plant that they are building there. I'm starting with what they say are indicators of success before I go back to give you what is actually the real picture on the ground, that is away from the positive spin that they put on the situation. Things that are indisputable, that everyone lives, that everyone can see, that everyone can witness through evidence that is in abundance. And then there are also a few other things that they also indicate that they show that they've been doing well. They will tell you that Tobacco production has been going up, cases of government support, and that is produced largely by small-scale farmers, largely black farmers. Of course, you recall that Zimbabwe is the biggest tobacco producer in Africa. So they will point at those indicators in the mining sector, in the agricultural sector, in the infrastructural development sector. They will show you that Harare International Airport, for instance, which is now called the Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport, they will say they've been expanding it, which is true. But here is the problem. The problem is that these things in their totality, they are a drop in the ocean compared to the economic calamity that Zimbabwe faces, that the people of Zimbabwe faces on a day-to-day basis. If you look at what has been happening since the last election, which is in August last year, inflation is going through stratospheric levels. Whereas government, they put inflation at plus minus 50%, 49-point-something, 47-point-something percent. There are independent economies that put inflation in Zimbabwe at 1,600 and above as an indicator. The currency has been crashing. It has become worthless again. It's one of those currencies that people simply don't want to have in their hand. Those who do business with it are those who need local currency to pay for certain things. But when they want to have a currency which they can rely on for transactions today, tomorrow, and in the future, a transaction is rather a currency that is a store of value. They go to the US dollar, which is the main, most of the transactions in this economy as we sit here right now, 85% and above, people prefer to buy and sell, to transact through the US dollar. So I've told you about inflation now, which is totally uncontrollable. Goods and services, prices, they are going up and up and up. The currency is crashing. Then let's go to the issue of jobs. It has become a perennial problem. There are no jobs being created, but there are jobs that have been lost on a massive scale over the past 24 years. I'm starting at 2000 when this situation started imploding. There are simply no jobs. That is the reason why you see Zimbabweans every now and then, they are leaving the country in droves. After the election, the numbers of people who are leaving the country, they've just increased. These are indicators coming from various organizations that track migration. You find that people are moving out rather than coming back. They're going to South Africa, they're going to Botswana, they're going to the UK, especially the UK now. There's been a lot of trend of people moving in large numbers to the UK to go to the health profession as nurses, nurse aides, and some other related areas of work. They are going to Australia, Canada, New Zealand, going to the United States. Those are the countries that Zimbabweans are going to in large numbers. This is indisputable. No matter whatever a government spokesman, President Emmerson Mnangagwa and his ministers say, the reality facing Zimbabweans is indisputable. If the situation is deteriorating, it's getting worse, there is no chance that they will fix it because they just don't have the solution.
So, to me, let me... very forthright and very frank, and I don't think, you know, there would be a dispute of some of the things that you are talking about. Let me ask you this. I'm a journalist on this side of the border, and you're a journalist on that side of the border. Are you able to write and reflect to the people of Zimbabwe and maybe to the world as you know, some multimedia journalists are able to do, and how, you know, news would travel these days? Would you be able to reflect the sentiments that you have just indicated in the last couple of minutes to either the people of Zimbabwe or to the rest of the world as you are engaging with me tonight? You could say, well, here I am, I'm engaging with you, but yeah, you know, I you know what I mean. I'm talking about, you know, are you freely able to engage those particular sentiments to myself, to the people of Zimbabwe, and to the rest of the world?
Absolutely. We are able to say these things. We've been saying them for nearly 30 years now, when things started going bad. For over 2 decades, going to 3 decades, we've been saying exactly the same things in those terms and words. This means that the situation in Zimbabwe, which is basically an authoritarian political system that governs this country, you are free to say what you want to say. There is freedom of speech in Zimbabwe. But the situation doesn't end there. Because if those people in government are listening to me, they will be very happy to end there. But the line is, there is freedom of speech, but there is no guarantee of freedom after speech. It happens all the time. Only recently, to give you an example of that, we did a story about corruption in the military. That is the project that I run. By the way, I run a project called the NewsVox. It's an investigative journalism project. I edited that project there. So we did a story about corruption in the military, and those guys came for us. And for some weeks, I was not here. I came a few days ago. I was in South Africa, in Joburg, because of the pressure that was exerted on us after publication. The news editor of our project, he only came today from out of town for weeks because of that. So I'm using this example to demonstrate to you that we can say these things, we can write these things, but these guys are very hostile. They have tools of repression that they use against the media. There's some legislative tools, repressive laws that they use. They use a hostile political system run by people who just don't accept the role of the media, especially the watchdog role. They don't like investigative journalists at all. At the slightest excuse, they will throw you into jail. They will intimidate. They will harass. They do it all the time. This is what used to happen under Mugabe. It's still happening under Mnangagwa. We've had journalists like Hopewell Chingono. He has recently relocated from Harare to Johannesburg. He has previously been thrown into jail for journalistic work, writing some issues around corruption. Throughout my career, I've been arrested many times, many times. I've been through the courts. I've been through quite a lot of harassment. It's a fact. Those things are established. So I'm trying to say that we do these things. We write. But there are always consequences for that. So it's an environment where you just need to have to be gritty. You have to keep on fighting. You have to keep on negotiating. It's contested terrain viciously. Sometimes the consequences are very serious. Sometimes it's mere intimidation. Sometimes it's they deploy legal instruments, defamation, and other things in order to suppress the media, to suppress journalists. They don't like to be scrutinized. They don't like to be held accountable. They don't want to be transparent with the public affairs. So that's the reason why they are hostile. But we always tell them that, you see, there is no reason. Media is not a threat to government. It's only a threat to the corrupt people in government. It's a threat to those who abuse power. So if you find yourself afraid of media, if you find yourself in conflict with media, it's because you have something to hide. And usually that is something to do with corruption, human rights abuses, abuse of power, mismanagement of public affairs, failure to govern in the public interest, failure to deliver social services. That's the reason why they become hostile to the media.
Let me ask you, Dumi, is there... And you know, maybe it's a perceptionist, you know, conversation, but I'm sure you would have written about it. You would have had, you would have an understanding of it. You would have an understanding of the narrative, the perspective around it as well. Is there in Zimbabwe, after everything that you've said to me, an understanding of the South African government's position towards the ruling party in Zimbabwe and maybe, you know, the soft approach, and I use that very loosely, maybe you'll use a different approach, the soft approach towards the issue of ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe, the way elections are run, the way, you know, ZANU-PF governs that particular country, maybe sometimes the things that are said about ZANU-PF and issues of either corruption and or crime and or human rights. Is there an understanding for the position sometimes that South Africa takes? Or is there an understanding of a need for the country to do more as a neighbor, to highlight, to contribute, to engage, to maybe assist in those particular things that you are talking about, and to alleviate some of those things that you're talking about by engaging then forthrightly and proper? Is there an understanding for the South African government position, or is there total confusion as to where South Africa stands in Zimbabwe?
People are not confused about where South Africa stands in Zimbabwe in terms of its foreign policy, in terms of its bilateral relations with Zimbabwe, within the context of SADC, within the context of the AU, within the context of the UN and other multilateral platforms. South Africa is consistent, repeatedly, and forthrightly defended the Zimbabwean government through and through, with, of course, intermittent interventions where they will speak out here and there. But the pattern is so simple and clear. They stand in solidarity with the ZANU-PF government. The ANC government in South Africa stands in solidarity with the ZANU-PF government in Zimbabwe. They have differences in how things should be addressed in Zimbabwe. They have clashed before, but the main framework of engagement between Zimbabwe and South Africa is that of revolutionary solidarity derived from the liberation struggles of the region. Is that of fraternity. Is that of the attempt to seek to reproduce and perpetuate their hold on power in the region.
Pause a second. In light of what you've just said to me about the issues in Zimbabwe, the economy, the inflation rate, the political, you know, climate, and all of those particular issues, and then I ask you about the South African understanding of what's going on in Zimbabwe and the South African relationship with ZANU-PF, and I acknowledge what you're saying to me. And I go back to a question then again, and I'm going to ask you maybe just maybe more focused. Is there an understanding then of the South African government's solidarity with a previous revolutionary liberation movement, more so and over and above the issues of the people on the ground? Because you could have a solidarity and a unity and a camaraderie relationship with another entity, but to what extent and where does it end? To what extent then does that relationship and have an understanding of that relationship in Zimbabwe go when what you have given me over the last 10 minutes indicates life in Zimbabwe? How is there then an understanding that the revolutionary relationship is over and above the poverty, the economic hardships, that the political abuses that would come? How is that relationship understood over and above the civilian plight?
The South African government over the years, particularly starting under the presidents of Thabo Mbeki, Jacob Zuma, and now Cyril Ramaphosa, they understand very well the situation on the ground, that the economy in Zimbabwe is basically collapsed and stabilized, plateaued in crisis.
I would agree. They are smart people. They would understand that.
They definitely know.
Mm.
They are smart people. They know the truth. Besides, they have a mission here, which is people who collect and cut the information, which is their job here to brief them on specifics. Mm. That is on detail. So there is no question about whether they understand the gravity of the situation on the ground or not. They do, which is why they have sought before to intervene. But within the framework of revolutionary solidarity, they are intervening in order to try to arrest the situation from further deterioration, because when the political and security situation in Zimbabwe deteriorates to an extent of collapse, the first country that is impacted upon very severely in the region is South Africa, because obviously of the economy that it has, because of the opportunity that it offers to immigrants, obviously within the context of problems in South Africa as well. So you find that a South African government is concerned about these problems in Zimbabwe because they have a direct impact on South Africa, particularly its economy, its social service delivery situation, and to a large extent, its security situation. Now, given that background, against that background, South Africa sought to intervene to resolve this amicably with the ZANU-PF. In other words, their framework of engagement is that we are brothers, we are comrades, we have revolutionary solidarity, we have a fraternal relation. So let's talk like that. And they've sought to nudge ZANU-PF to address some of these problems. Because Zimbabwe, over the decades, has now become not a foreign policy issue for South Africa. It's now, to all intents and purposes, a domestic issue for South Africa. Zimbabwe is just an issue for South Africa, as is the issue of crime in South Africa, as is the issue of unemployment, as is the issue of social problems in South Africa. When you discuss those things, it's difficult to ignore the subject of Zimbabwe because it's now intertwined with all those problems. So South Africa wants a solution. But the problem is that the approach they use to find that solution is ineffective. They are rebuffed every now and then by ZANU-PF. Cyril Ramaphosa came. He tried to send a delegation when he came into power to talk to ZANU-PF so that he can engage and re-energize the process of trying to resolve the problem. They came. They were rebuffed. Then he sent, now that was via the government line first, and then he tried to use the path of party-to-party engagement. He sent, first of all, the former ANC Secretary General, Ace Magashule. He came, engaged ZANU-PF, and then later he sent Fikile Mbalula. But there's been no progress because ZANU-PF is anti-reform. It's an unreformed and unreconstructed repressive regime. It's not going to move. Reform, by definition, is a threat to ZANU-PF to continued hold on power. So they will not reform, especially with mild pressure from South Africa. They failed to reform under immense international pressure. They failed to reform. So the effort that South Africa is making to resolve the Zimbabwean problem is ineffective. Is totally not changing anything. But we do understand and know that South Africa wants a solution. But the way they're engaging it, it's a problem because they are starting by saying, no, we are not going to be harsh with ZANU-PF. We are not going to speak out in public against ZANU-PF. These are our revolutionary comrades. They are brothers and so on. You just need to refer back to what how Mbeki engaged with Mugabe. Even when Mugabe was rigging elections, while Mbeki was trying to resolve the problem, the contradiction was that he wanted a solution, but being part of the problem. How so? If you endorse stolen election when you are seeking a solution to a problem that by definition is a political problem in which electoral theft or disputed election sit at the heart of the problem, then you're not going to be able to resolve the problem. And then Mbeki would go out of his way to sing praises from Mugabe. You just need to go back and listen to a few clips of what he used to say about Mugabe. Even after Mugabe's death, when they organized the Mugabe Memorial in Durban, he was willing even to be revisionist, Mbeki, on history in order to protect Mugabe even after death. to claim that Mugabe did quite a lot for South African liberation struggle and this and that. But he does know Mbeki because he was working with ZAPU and the Zebra. He knows that Mugabe didn't do that much. He took a calculated strategic position for his own reputation rather than for really aiding the South African struggle. It's a debate that is there, but people like Mbeki, they will tell you otherwise because it served their interest of standing there, posturing as Pan-Africanist, posturing as people who need to be in solidarity with Mugabe. What kind of Pan-Africanist supports the suffering of the ordinary person in Zimbabwe? What kind of Pan-Africanists are they? Whether they are murders, they are killings, this can't have been too much time.
Would they not be Pan-Africanists to me who have maybe not come to a realization, who maybe have an understanding that the South African economy can and is able to carry the load of Zimbabwe and its people and have an understanding for everything that you said. And maybe they are Pan-Africanists in that particular space that suggests then the irony would be a suggestion that says, you know what, as we talk to ZANU-PF and as ZANU-PF does not reform and the hardships continue, we as a South African economy, we would have porous borders. You would be allowed to enter. Our hospitals would be able to be engaged with. Our schools would be able to be engaged with. Our labor would be able to be engaged with. And so our economy would be able then to carry the load whilst these Pan-Africanist concepts are being engaged with a country like Zimbabwe. Would that not be then some form of an understanding maybe of what's going on in the complexity of what you were describing to us?
The South African government and the ruling party, the ANC, they have complained to the Zimbabwean authorities that the problems that have resulted, especially the economic problems and the wave of immigration rather than emigration into South Africa, are straining the South African economy. The last meeting they actually had where this was discussed very robustly, that issue came up. ZANU-PF was claiming that emigration into South Africa from Zimbabwe is not a new phenomenon. It has always been going on for decades and decades. But the ANC were saying that no, but there's been an accelerated intensification of emigration or movement of immigrants from Zimbabwe into South Africa. Both those positions are true. Zimbabweans didn't start going to South Africa now. They've always gone there. But here's the difference. The difference is that at the moment, since the economic collapse in Zimbabwe since the late 90s, there have been a wave and a wave and a wave of Zimbabwean immigrants into South Africa who are forced by the economic, the political and social situation to go into South Africa, who otherwise wouldn't want to go there if they had an option as they had before 2000. There were not many Zimbabweans going to South Africa before 2000. Because there was economic stability, there was social stability. The politics was has always been as bad as it is. That is violent, brutal, Hobbesian in nature, life short, brutal, nasty. That is in the political arena. But there has been a clear collapse of the Zimbabwean economy, which has forced Zimbabweans to emigrate to South Africa in large numbers. South Africa cannot try to have its cake and eat it. Support ZANU-PF on the one hand, while it's there, they don't want the consequences of ZANU-PF's rule, one of them which is a movement of Zimbabweans in large numbers, a flood of Zimbabweans into South Africa. The South African economy, we all know, it cannot be able to carry that because the unemployment is very high in South Africa. The social problems, there are so many in South Africa. They're not really able to carry that. That is why you see now social instability. That's where you see these things, people call them xenophobic fights and clashes on the ground and violence. It's because there's an overstretch of opportunity. There's an overstretch of service. There's an overstretch of the economy there. Mm. So South Africa needs to be clear about what it wants to do. And this issue is not that complicated. They want a Zimbabwe that is stable. Mm. And it starts with elections. They cannot support stolen elections in Zimbabwe and complain about immigrants on the other hand and expect stability in Zimbabwe. Mm. Those contradictions in South Africa, the strategy of engagement on the Zimbabwean questions have crippled their effectiveness, and they've made them not be able to find any solution to the problem. So they need clarity of thought and mind and clarity of strategy and even the tactics of engagement. They need that. They need to be clear, what is the outcome? How do we engage ZANU-PF? How do we move them into those positions? What leverage do we have? If you hack back to history, obviously the situation is different. John Foster, when he was engaging with Ian Smith during the apartheid era and the Rhodesian era in Zimbabwe, they were allies, but there were issues that they differed on. When he wanted outcomes, they were prepared to deploy certain leverages, including withdrawing South African soldiers who were in Zimbabwe, helped with the Rhodesians, including sometimes switching off electricity, including blockading trains. Am I saying the ANC should do that? No, we are not that naive. We understand that is not how it would work. But you use the leverage in a different way, depending on the circumstances, to make the other guy understand that you are not agreeing with this. You want movement. You want change. Mm. That can be done. Zambia tried it during the last election. They were isolated. They rejected SADC as we stand here. They did not endorse Zimbabwe's last election. Mm. Because in Zambia, the Zambian president, Hakainde Hichilema, he sent the former deputy president of Zambia and so on. He's an opposition leader there. He came. They refused to endorse those elections. That is a serious statement of disapproval. Mm. But Zimbabwe, with the support of South Africa, they've maneuvered around that. Because South Africa refused to come to the party. But yet South Africa is the one that is more affected by the Zimbabwe situation than Zambia. So the South African leadership has been incompetent in handling the Zimbabwean situation. They have been unstrategic. They have been ineffective. From Mbeki up to Ramaphosa, they've all failed to find a solution to Zimbabwe. Not because it's their issue. No, because the issue has implications for South Africa. Therefore, they must be part of the processes that seek a solution to the Zimbabwean question.
Dumi, I want to ask you, Dumi, and hold this particular question, right? What are those implications for South Africa? I want you to think about that, but I'm going to bring Moses in Bramley into the conversation. Moses?
Good evening, Denzel. How are you?
I'm good, Moses. How are you?
I'm good. There's no way that this Zimbabwe, South African issue can be solved. Because these are two governments that are collaborating just to make a people of Zimbabwe to suffer. Because if you look now, the secret weapon, these guys are attending a lecture on how to rig, because the Zimbabwean government has been rigging the election. They've been attending a lecture called the secret weapon. So there's no way that this guy can do anything just to change the situation. We'll be just talking and talking, and these people, they don't even care about whatever we talk, that these people are making us to suffocate. They are saturating us in this country, but they don't even care. Our brothers and children and whoever, they are not working, and they are just hiring these people on a basis that they are cheap labors. There's no way that they will stand up and say, Mnangagwa, we had enough of you.
Moses in Bramley, let's take Stembiso down in Durban. It's been a long time, Stembiso, and here we are, and I'm glad you're here, Stembiso. How are you?
I'm all right, Denzel. How are you?
I'm really good. You got a question or a comment, Stembiso?
Yeah, question, comment.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to call when Tlhabiso was there, but anyway, Matunjwa did represent us.
Yeah, from Dundee, KZN.
Yeah, I mean, a comment from the your guest. Mm. I pick up ama double standards when Zimbabweans who have access to the mic or the pen, you know, speak about their troubles in relation to South Africa.
Mm.
I kind of feel, you know, as though like being bullied, you know, that they're bullying the South African government, you know, to say, go to Zimbabwe and fix your problems.
Mm.
And if you do not, we'll come and trouble your people, right? And I don't understand, you know, as to why they keep on pushing that narrative, because it is illogical.
Mm.
Zimbabweans should be in Zimbabwe and fixing their issues, challenging, you know, the state and claiming power. You know, if they cannot do it in Zimbabwe, they should not come to do it in South Africa.
Mm.
And also, I mean, what it basically means is that they know, you know, that if they bully the South African government, you know, they will bully them at a rhetorical level, you know, but actually it is you and I who are bearing the cost, right? I am a middle class person, a first generation graduate in my family, so I pay black tax. My parents, my extended family members do not have medical aid. I do. You know, however, I'm having to pay double or triple for healthcare services because this country cannot budget for healthcare services. Not because of corruption or anything else. They cannot budget. The CEOs of hospitals cannot budget for healthcare services because they don't know how many people are there. The budget runs out, you know, like at first quarter of a financial year, and it's because of Zimbabwe. So it doesn't cost the state. It is costing us. You know, so Zimbabwe, let them go home, be smart, and fix their issues. Challenge, you know, Mnangagwa and everything else. You know, and the way, you know, they say they're intelligent, but, you know, they're first line. You know, they're like first line. You know, it's like, you know, it's like a biblical first line. Yeah, things are bad in Zimbabwe. The situation is bad in Zimbabwe. You know, fix it. You know, use your intellect to fix your issues at home, not to come here to bully us and to bully the ANC government or the South African government, because they do not have power to change the situation. You do. Thank you.
Stembiso in Durban, thank you. Dumi, there's that particular statement question, you know, that always comes about, Dumi, in a sense that, and I'll pick up on what Stembiso is saying, is that, and Thabo Mbeki said it, I think, lyrically and over and over and over again, when he or the government did not want to intervene, the people of Zimbabwe must find a solution to the problems in Zimbabwe. And of course, that particular statement, I think, reverberates through the present system that we have at the moment. How do the people, just picking up on Stembiso's statement and question, how do the people fix for themselves the issues in Zimbabwe?
Thanks for Stembiso's contribution. But
sure.
Here is the problem straight away with what she was saying.
Sure.
To begin with, nobody, it's clearly a misrepresentation. Nobody is saying the obligation to fix the Zimbabwean problems lies with the South African government and South African people. Nobody is blackmailing the South African government and South African people over the Zimbabwe situation. We are talking geopolitics here and its implications. When a neighboring state fails, whether you like it or not, if you are in a position, a geopolitical position and a geo-economic position like South Africa, you'll have the impact from the next door. In other words, you will certainly feel the impact of the collapse next door. You cannot go into a lager and say, no, Zimbabwe must just go back and fix it. That is not geopolitics, what you are talking about. It's retreating into a lager and refusing to understand that if your neighbor is collapsing next door, it will have an impact of you. You can choose to retreat into a lager and say it's their problem, they must deal with it. But you can also choose to be pragmatic and say, whatever this family next door to me does and fails, their children come and eat at my home.
Mm.
Would you then say, I'm going to close the gate, lock my door so that we eat under locked doors? Or you then say, I think we need to talk to this neighbor so that he doesn't direct his money towards beer and other things and feed his children. What is more pragmatic there? To retreat into a lager or to engage with the neighbor? I would choose engagement. Mm. Some obviously would choose that. Nobody is expecting the South African government to resolve the problem. Nobody is expecting South Africans to resolve Zimbabwe's problem. But what we are saying is this, that if the South African government supports a ruling party next door which collapses its economy, which brutalizes citizens, and end up with Zimbabweans running into South Africa and Zimbabwe becoming geopolitically a domestic policy issue for South Africa. Mm. So the South African government has no choice but to engage. What else can the South African government do? To go to Union Building there and say, it's not our issue, it's their issue, when you know that there are millions of Zimbabweans there. You've got to engage the problem. You've got to broaden your strategies of resolving the problem. Zimbabweans must do their part. But it's obvious that countries in the region who are affected by the Zimbabwean situation must also play a role. It's as simple as all that. So let's not engage in debates that seek to be about apportioning blame. It's not about apportioning blame. Mm. It's about resolving a problem.
Sure.
And the other thing that we need to understand is that those Zimbabweans who are there, they are not there to blackmail, as Thembiso seems to suggest, that if the South African government is supporting ZANU, therefore we are coming to South Africa. No. Mm. It's not an issue of blackmail. This is an issue of survival. It's an issue of immigration or emigration in a geopolitical context. It happens here in Southern Africa. It happens in West Africa. It happens all over the world, which is the reason why when those things arise, governments in those regions, they understand the geopolitical nature of the problem and resolve and they seek to engage it like that.
Mm. Mexico, so we cannot Mexico take and the those U.S. Mm.
Yeah, we can't take those positions, which I would rather, and respectfully so, and I really hope the stand is to take it that way.
No,
we
I
cannot
think...
take... these positions of retreating into lagers and say, no, Zimbabwe must just go and resolve their problem. But they're not going to go. So what are you going to do if you don't want to engage? We know that your statement say they must go there. It's not going to change the reality on the ground. So what do you do? What you do is you become pragmatic. You engage with the problem.
Let's talk to me about just the U.S., you know, and I think in the beginning, you know, maybe there was confusion or maybe there was not confusion in the Zimbabwean context. People were initially writing, you know, the U.S. has lifted sanctions without the context and all the other issues that would have then come from that particular announcement by the U.S. With sanctions and that program that's in place since 2003. How have the Zimbabweans picked up on that particular story? Have they celebrated? Have they thought it was, you know, about time? Because what the U.S. is ultimately saying that it's refocusing and in essence, what it's also saying, it's elevating its efforts with a new set of tools and, you know, taking the pressure off either the Zimbabwe and its people and putting it where it then needs to be putting it. Sanctions and human rights abuses and corrupt actors, those are the ones that it's targeting. And then termination then of the Zimbabwe sanction authority. You've got designated 11 Zimbabwean nationals and three entities that are now finding themselves within the focus of the U.S. What's been the reaction there? And just give us an understanding of whether that's actually going to work.
I'll start with the reactions.
Yeah.
The reactions within the government of Zimbabwe has been contradictory because there's been a lack of understanding of what this means.
Mm.
the new measures? What do they mean? What are they and what do they mean?
Hence I also said to me, when I was looking at the headlines, I was a bit confused, and I think the media were also relatively confused by what this totally
means. Yes, true. Mm. The media also did not help the situation. They helped in the clutter. Mm. They muddled the situation further.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example to illustrate that point. A government spokesman in Zimbabwe, some guy called Nick Mangwana, he seemed to think that the situation has improved. Mm-hmm. So he was basically saying, well, we welcome this, but as long as our president is still on sanctions, we are still not happy and that.
Mm.
Then you get the president himself saying, no, we are not, we don't care about what they are doing. We condemn this unreservedly because these sanctions are illegal. They must not be there in the first place.
Mm.
Right. That is the position of SADC. SADC has been singing day in, day out that sanctions on Zimbabwe must be lifted because they've taken a position that they are illegal.
Mm.
That is why the South African president in particular, at every forum, multilateral forum, he cannot address the UN or any other multilateral forum and not end up by saying the United States and the Western world must lift the sanctions on Zimbabwe. It's because of the static position which they've agreed that whenever they get an opportunity, especially on international platforms, they must say, articulate that.
Mm.
Now, the government of Zimbabwe, they are not clear what this means. Here is what it means. It's simple. I mean, everybody can read. If you want to just understand that, you read this thing called the Global Magnitsky Sanctions Program. It's now the flagship program for the United States. There's been a debate in the United States itself, as elsewhere around the world, whether sanctions achieve desired results or not. And the verdict generally has been that sanctions, they just don't make a change.
Mm.
They just probably worsen the situation. Because Zimbabwe has been under these measures since 2003. The regime here has dug in and committed more atrocities, human rights abuses, since 2002, when this program started, and of course,
in fact, that's what the U.S. says. They say it continues to worsen gross abuses, the political, the economy, the human rights, targeting of civil society, severe restrictions on political activity, and then stifling fundamental freedoms. They say that's continuing in essence, and if not growing.
Mm. Yeah, which is then why they then decided that we need to revise this program and come up with a new one.
Mm.
And the new one is now focusing on individuals that they say are culpable in corruption, human rights abuses, and the basic misgovernance of the country.
Mm.
That's what they've done now. So they've removed the broad sanction measures and imposed a much more targeted sanction sanctions regime.
Mm.
This is the reason why they have the president of Zimbabwe and 10 others, which means the president, his wife, one of the two vice presidents, and some other people who are part of that, and then three entities.
Mm.
The logic or the rationale of that, they are saying that these are the people who are misruling Zimbabwe. These are the people that are involved in corruption. They are saying that these are the people involved in human rights abuses.
Mm.
The Zimbabwean government, on the other hand, they've actually fiercely protested and say, this is now defamatory. This is now amounting to vilification. They are actually demanding that the United States, that obviously through diplomatic channels, must retract those measures and the statements associated with those measures. Withdraw the sanctions themselves, or they must also, they claim that is Zimbabweans, the United States must also withdraw the specific statement that was issued to announce the measure. Now, obviously we know the United States is not going to do that, but it's just a protest by the Zimbabwean government. What this means is that the sanctions remain, but narrowed down or targeted to those entities mentioned. What it also means that the United States is no longer, for instance, under some act called the ZEDERA there. It has not been repealed because obviously it needs Congress.
True.
Processes associated with that to be removed. They are saying that they are no longer going to oppose, for instance, the extension of credit or loans by international or financial institutions or multilateral institutions where the United States is represented and is the largest say. For instance, in the World Bank, the IMF, the African Development Bank, they are not going to exercise the veto that they had all along and were using to say no money goes to them. They're not going to do that. They are going to focus on these individuals that they believe are the ones causing the suffering of Zimbabweans. Now, if you ask me the question, will that work? Of course it won't. Because remember, even if they've done this, these people were already part of the old sanctions regime anyway. So what's new there? Nothing, except that they've just focused on them. So there isn't any material change in this. They've narrowed, focused on these individuals, but the regime itself, that is the sanctions regime, is not going to erode the Zimbabwean regime's hold on power. It's just going to be symbolic, really.
Got you. To me... You know, thanks for an absolutely interesting conversation, and I totally appreciate also the honesty to which you've come to the conversation. Are you coming to South Africa to cover the elections in any way?
Yeah, I'm always in South Africa almost almost every other weekend. I'm there
because it's a it's a porous border. I understand.
Yeah, Turin, it's across the border, and I grew up there and all that kind of thing. But I have many reasons for coming there. So during the elections, I will definitely be there. No doubt about it.
The next time you're here, pop into Power 98.7, and maybe pop into the studio, and come in and show face.
No problem. I'll definitely do that without fail.
Sure. Tumi, thank you so much for the conversation.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks.
Thank you. Tumi Muleya, multimedia journalist. After saying what he said, I hope that he's still got the freedom to express and freedom to write tomorrow. Quite an interesting conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.